This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit imnct.com for more information. Hey everybody, welcome back to Behind the Video. This is episode number 84. Tim, we've been doing this a long time now, like a year and a half. So almost 2 years. So I am very happy about that. And the Tim I am referring to is Tim Street, who's on the other coast. Tim, how are you this morning?
I'm well. I did go to a conference this week.
I thought you were done with conferences for a while.
Well, I got invited to one by my buddy Ted, and I went there and saw our buddy Bernie Sue speak. So it was really cool. I learned a few things about what Bernie is doing with affiliate marketing for his show MO Approved, which was kind of cool. Some insider stuff. He did a little case study. So it was a good conference called Discover Me. Discovermeme.org, I think, is the website if you want to check it out. It was a real mix of content creators, investment bankers, brands, studios, networks. It wasn't just like one set of birds of a feather. But speaking of birds of a feather, we have a guest.
We do, and Kristen, who might that be?
Welcome. Tell us about yourself.
Hi, guys. My name is Kristen Mell, and I am the CEO of the Telofilms.com. I do want to sort of put a West is Telofilms.com, but we merged with a site called OneMoreLesbian.com. So technically the URL is OneMoreLesbian.com/Telo, but it's just easier to say Telofilms. But I wanted to give One More Lesbian a shout out.
Right. So, and if you go to Telo, it goes there, right? So
it does, it's all linked up, right? Exactly.
Now, you've got something interesting because Tim and I have been talking a lot about cash registers and finding ways to monetize your content.
Monetize.
Now, you have built a tremendous fan base, and they pay you to watch the content you make. So why don't you talk about that?
They do, yes. So Telo started out, you know, we launched 6 years ago as a site that was open. We were going to be the lesbian YouTube was sort of our vision. And we thought, you know, we'll have, you know, the people who upload their fan videos onto YouTube will come over and they'll upload them now onto Telo. And then we'll also make original content to sort of differentiate ourselves. And about 2 years into that model, we realized that's not going to work. You know, we couldn't get the number of views to really have sponsors or advertising come on board. You know, we focus on a niche, right? So now it's not just like the LGBT community. Like, we go for like the L in the
so
community.
Very specific group of people.
Very, very specific. So, I realized, you know what, we can't be the YouTube of lesbian content, but why don't we try to be the HBO of lesbian content and put high-quality premium content videos behind a paywall and sort of let people know, listen, if you support us, we can make more of these, because the lesbian community is very, you know, always looking for their stories and are wonderful supporters of, you know, people who make content that's specifically for that community. So we launched with our first project called Cowgirl Up. We partnered with Nancy Lee Myatt, who had a wonderful track record not only in web series but also in lesbian content for television. And we just sort of like took a whole bunch of sort of like lesbians and people and put them in on horses and had an all-female Western.
Tell me about lesbians. What is that?
That's a term that we use that's sort of like someone who is kind of like famous in the lesbian community.
Okay.
Whereas they have this amazing following in the lesbian community, you might not have heard of them as much in mainstream, but in the lesbian community, like everyone knows who they are, or, you know, they have a big fan base. So, so we started charging, we charged $3.99 a month, and we've been doing this for about 3 years now. We have 12 original series that you can only find on Telo. Like, we made sure that we were exclusive, because otherwise there's no reason. If you could go to Netflix, Hulu Plus, you know, YouTube to get our projects, we lose what, you know, why someone would pay. So we make sure the Rs are exclusive to Tello. So we have 12 projects. Three of them have a season two, which we're really proud of. And right now we're currently in the process of launching our, you know, sort of what we call our historic groundbreaking series, Nikki and Nora, and also Kiss Around Famous season two. And so our subscriptions have increased over 100% since December 22nd with the launch of Nikki and Nora. So we're really seeing a wonderful return on investment in investing in high quality content.
So how does your paywall work? Kind of, you know, from an independent content creator standpoint, how have you got this set up? What are you using for hosting? How do people charge their credit card? What are some of the tools that you're using?
Sure. So when we were our standalone Tello, we were on a Drupal platform. And then we used UberCart as a plugin, and PayPal is our credit card processing company. When we merged with One More Lesbian, they're on a WordPress format. So we had to flip everything over to WordPress. We used the S2 member plugin to have that talk to PayPal. And so we still use the same credit card processing company, PayPal, which we have found to be, you know, real, like, low cost. People trust PayPal. Their customer service has been really good. So we've had a relatively good experience with those guys.
And then where are the videos hosted?
We use Amazon to stream.
Okay.
Yeah, so how do the S2 hub.
And then that S2 plugin is what allows them to get past the paywall?
Yeah.
So it's all automated through S2 plugin on WordPress.
Right.
That sounds pretty simple. Now,
that took a lot to figure out, Tim.
No. I mean, yeah, like, once you've discovered it, seems, oh, well, it's just a plug-in. So you plug it in, you fill out the info,
exactly.
have a nice day. So yeah. What about in terms of the content itself? Is it rated R? Is there nudity?
Yeah, great question. You know, no. Right now, I think the sort of the raciest we get is you see, and I'm really trying to make sure, but, you know, you see some, like, shirts off and bras. So we don't do something, you know, we're not sort of, like, softcore. We haven't
You said HBO, so that's what I was...
We haven't done our Game of Thrones yet, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Not to say that that's not on the, you know, it couldn't happen in the future, but it's, you know, we don't really have a rating system, nor do we, have any kind of, like, standard that does need to come over it. And, you know, I do want to mention, you guys, that was remiss in mentioning this. 80% of the net subscription fees go back to our content creators. So we create some of our content, but we also have independent filmmakers who distribute through us. And we are very generous to them and distribute 80% based on the number of views. So the more views that their project has, the bigger chunk of that 80% that they get.
So you've built really like your own Netflix in a sense, right? That you're doing some of your own productions and you're also finding high quality content that you're curating. I'm assuming you're probably distributing that content exclusively for them. Is that
exactly? You only receive payment if you're exclusive to Tello. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'll give you an example. Kiss Around Famous, which is by an amazing independent writer producer named Rola Selback, did season one. She kept it exclusive to Tello for 4 months. She actually did really well for Tello. You know, she probably doesn't want to share how much we sent her, but, you know, we sent her a nice little chunk of change for her work. And you know, I've heard of some distribution deals, and I'm not familiar with them, that, you know, take a year at least to start seeing a payout. We immediately, as soon as you get a view, boom, you're starting to receive funds, from us. She then decided she wanted to put those for free, so she no longer received any, you know, so they're up on YouTube now, and now season two is launching, and the same thing will happen. Season two, she'll receive those payments, and she will get the percentage of the 80%.
That's great. And for people that are trying to finance these projects, you know, we've met over the last year and a half a lot of people doing web series, and it's a lot of people just go to YouTube because that's where they go.
Exactly.
It's there's so much stuff out there. It's hard to get ahead and at least get some financing that you have to raise and you may not ever make back. So it's
exactly.
Now, when you started, when we started talking to you this morning, you mentioned something I thought was interesting, was that you started that going down that route of just kind of putting it out there and letting people view it for free. And something happened and you said, oh, wait a minute, this isn't working. We got to figure out something else. And I think it's an important message here because a lot of people put it out there thinking that, oh, once it's up there, everyone in the world is going to see it and watch it and love it. But that's not the case. Can you talk about what it was like when you were doing that? What was it that made you realize that you had to do something different? And what kind of analytics did you use to make that decision?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, we were using the, view counts. And this was before, all the sort of view count hubbub and what's a real video and
right.
people, so we were really looking at what was our traffic to the site, what were the view counts that we were getting, what videos were getting were the most popular. And interestingly enough, on our site, it was our original content. Those by far had the most aggregate views as opposed to anything that we would pull over from YouTube. Because we would start pulling stuff over, from YouTube and sort of also being curators. And, One More Lesbian.com is a wonderful curator. That's not sort of where my passion was. Like, I really wanted to create original content. And so, when we looked at the fact that our original content was getting more views, and I just knew, I started reading articles about how cheap, the click-through rate on some of the ads that we would have on the site, paid
nothing.
Like
50
nothing.
Cents or a dollar per thousand,
point,
right. You can't live
point
on that.
Whatever,
right.
I mean? And so we just, and I'm looking at the 5,000 people who are coming to our site a day and not, maybe clicking through on an ad, but not. And I was like, this is not going to work. We can't sustain, we were all like, advertising will sustain us.
Right. That we don't have to work for it. It'll just show up, right?
Didn't wasn't out there. And there were other, lesbian sites that could get millions of views and have been sort of on their own sort of roller coaster of trying to sustain. But, I think the other thing too, you guys, that I do want to mention is when you start looking for views and advertising, when you're dealing with a niche audience, you really start having to think about what does the public want to see. And I think you have to start making decisions that potentially compromise your artistic integrity.
And your core audience too, for that matter.
Yeah, and so we never had to do that. Like, we don't have to think of what's going to be a crossover project. What's going to get the straight, married women to watch. Like, we don't have to worry about that because we are a very bottom-up process. Our fans appreciate what we do. They let us know by subscribing. They let us know by, tweeting or Facebooking stuff that they love. And so we can really focus on the viewer and not the advertiser or not the sponsor or not the, the sort of mainstream people. And that there's a great freedom that comes with that for us, we felt.
How are most people discovering you?
A good bit of our traffic does come from, so we get some nice, One More Lesbian has a lot of people that come to the homepage. So we get some great push through through there. Other lesbian sites like AfterEllen.com, we see that's one of our top five sites where people will read something about one of our projects and click through. Twitter is a huge, huge piece for us. We're much more active on Twitter than Facebook. We're really trying to work on our Facebook presence, and we just got on Instagram. So we found that social media reviews of our projects always do really well for us if we can get a lesbian site to review it. And then any kind of articles or press that we can get, we'll get a click through.
It's fascinating stuff. And how hard was it for your audience to go from taking this free product to having to pay a monthly fee? Was that a hard ask?
Here's why it wasn't, because, our original content was an interview series called Tello Talks 2. So we didn't have, we hadn't had really a narrative project at that point. And that's when I sort of was like, if we're going to be, I did get some angel funding at the beginning. I had $10,000 left over. And I just was like, all right, I don't know if you guys play poker, but I just took that and I was like, I'm all in. I'm moving all in. We're putting all this money behind this narrative project that, you know, was like all female, chicks on horses, super, you know, kind of foxy ladies, and that's what we're going to do. So it wasn't difficult to ask because this wasn't content that we had been able to create from the beginning. So we were sort of like, hey, look at this new thing that you've not seen before and pay us for it. And
so, crowdfunding before there was crowdfunding.
Yeah, we actually did do crowdfunding, interestingly enough. Like, it was right when Kickstarter was coming out, but I was like, I don't want to pay a percentage. We have the ability to take payment on our site. So we just did like a little, we raised about $5,000 on just by getting folks to come in. And we gave perks, like we had our own perk levels and stuff like that. So, yeah, so we did that at the beginning as well.
This is great. And are you getting a lot of questions now from other series creators? Because you've found a way to monetize this and make it, I would imagine, to some degree sustainable, especially the, I think the greater the amount of content you create over time, the more you're going to have available for your subscribers. And, you know, it's working great for you. What are some of the things and challenges that you've had to face that you think might be helpful for other people that are trying to do the same thing?
Well, you know, here's what's kind of interesting that I'm still trying to like kind of wrap my head around sometimes. So we get a lot of people who say, I have this great idea, but I don't have any money. So can you make this for us? Mm. And, you know, and we've done that. We're about to release a project called Hashtag by these two fantastic writers. And so we will do that. What I have found is that, you know, an artist like Rolla Selback or like a Bridget McManus, who is also a filmmaker who is distributed through us, most people, when given the option of getting money from Tello or putting it up on YouTube, if they can afford to do it, will put it up on YouTube because I think they like want to be famous or they want to just get like more views. So at this point, people are saying to themselves, I don't really, if I can fund this, I don't want money for my art. I want fame. I want views. I want, you know, instead of like, I want the 19,000 or 30,000 views that I'm not going to make any money on or very little money on as opposed to, you know, the 4,000 subscribers that I could make, you know, anywhere from, you know, $300 to $2,000, you know, every 3 months.
Right. You know, I've noticed that a lot of times when I'm talking with independent content creators, I'll ask them, you know, what's the best thing that could happen? And the answer, I would say the majority of the time, the answer is we get a lot of views.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so your landlord takes views as rent? Your mortgage company now accepts views?
Tim, can I use that?
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's this offended look that comes over their face where it's like, well, no. Great things will happen. And I'm like, okay, well, what great things are going to happen? And what's the plan for making that happen? Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. I'll just put it on YouTube and great things will happen. And it's like, wow. Could you imagine somebody coming to a set with a camera and going, we didn't write a script, but great things are going to happen today.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's how they approach the business side of their filmmaking.
Do you think, Tim, that, and maybe this is part of it too, is that for many of them, maybe they're trying to develop a calling card for their production.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of them do believe that, you know, oh, they'll get a lot of views and then somebody's going to tap them on the head and make it all work for them.
Right.
That is extremely rare. I mean, if you can build an audience that is, you know, millions and millions of people, then yes. But chances are that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, you might get hundreds of thousands of people, and you can monetize that. I mean, if you look at some of the cable networks out there, their shows get hundreds of thousands of views, and they get like a, I don't know, $20 CPM on their show.
Yeah.
Maybe $30, $40, depending on how niche they are.
And so, what's interesting, too, by the way, is that there's also a subscription model on that cable side because they're getting the ad revenue plus the subscriber revenue from the channel, right? I mean, there's
– correct.
There's more to it than just the views, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think a lot of us as, you know, as artists, I mean, there's definitely a time where it makes sense to build an audience. But you need to know what you're going to do with that audience once you have them. Whereas if you've got great content and you know it's really good and you know specifically that it appeals to a niche, put it in a paywall.
Put it up, absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that I found is, you know, so for my YouTube channel, I did about 225,000 views last month, and that is equating with the ad revenue and the associate affiliate stuff, maybe $1,300 or $1,400 in revenue for that month. Now, my production costs are next to nothing, but imagine getting 200 and something thousand views is pretty good if you have a web series, except the fact that you've got to pay a lot more money to produce that series, actors, food, you know, you name it. It's not a cheap thing to do, and it's often hard to just rely on views alone. So it's certainly an interesting development there. And Tim talked about how you market the site. What are some of the challenges with self-hosting video like this? Do you have to think about how to protect the content from piracy and that sort of thing, or is it too niche, or people care too much about the product to steal it?
Oh gosh, I wish that were the case. that would be so generous, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
So we didn't have to worry as much about piracy, right? Like, piracy is a problem, is a great problem for us because it means we have reached a level where people are, you know, have the tech savviness to pirate it and feel like, oh, other people will want to see this. And so we have started reaching that level where we're being very cognizant and trying to, you know, find those errant, you know, folks who have copied it and thrown it into a share file or something like that. But it wasn't a huge problem at first. We have found a couple of folks who have done that. When we get to that point, I consider it a decent problem. We're kind of safe because we don't do downloads. You can only stream our projects. We don't do DVDs. We don't create anything physical, and we don't offer downloads. So I feel like offering downloads is an easier way for someone to post something because they're just throwing the file over. So you can't do that with ours. You have to record it from, you know,
right,
your
from the TV. Or something.
So mm-hmm. Exactly, and so that pulls down the content as well. The other thing is, I find, and this is just sort of like Kristen's theory, I have really nothing to back this up, mm-hmm. but I find that, you know, we're not geo-blocked at all. We don't block any country, whatsoever. And I find that piracy usually takes place when you deny access to some group or some place.
Right.
And so they want it, so they go about getting it in a way that, you know, is less than, you know, that is, you know, copyright infringement.
Right, and the fact that they want to pay for it, they can't, so I'm just going to go take it. Because
Exactly. I mean, I found myself kind of having that philosophy now that I've gone to some websites and tried to watch a TV show, and they're like, what cable provider do you have? And I cut cable. So, mm-hmm. you know, I don't – so now I can't watch their project, which is unbelievably frustrating.
Right,
so,
especially when you want to give them your money. To watch
yeah.
it, right?
So I was like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to give it to Apple then. I'm going to mm-hmm. give it to – you know, iTunes, because you're not allowing me to, and I'm not going to have to watch your stupid advertising. Anyway, so all that to say, I find that when you lock down content and make it that where someone's geo-blocked and can't get it at all, that's when they go to piracy. I think people now are sort of recognizing, you know, if I want to see something and support it and see more of it, I need to pay for it. And, you know, we're not a huge sort of like conglomerate, you know, company where someone can sort of say like, oh, Capitol Records doesn't need my money. You know, I think there's that sort of attitude as well. We're like a super small shop and let people know all the time. We can only do this because people pay for subscriptions.
Now, technology's moving along a little bit and people are starting to watch these web series on devices. I'm assuming if you have like an iPad or something, you could do the AirPlay thing to watch it on
yep.
television. How are you preparing for the onslaught of set-top boxes and other things like that?
God, you know, that's such a great question. So we've been sort of toying around with the set-top piece and in recognizing there are some companies out there that can essentially take your infrastructure and build it for like Roku or Apple TV or, you know, all these devices. And so we're looking into the kind of the internet protocol or the set-top boxes, we have always been very passionate about being iDevice friendly. So early on, before it was super easy, we had to figure out how to encode for iPads and iPhones. So we've always, you know, had that in mind whenever we were, you know, creating the files. So we have to make it very specific for Android, iDevice, you know, laptop. So we haven't gone to the set-top boxes yet, but it's in our minds.
How does your rev share work? Do you have like a standard percentage rev share with the content owners and your distribution?
Yeah, so what we do is, so we have sort of three different tiers of how you can partner with Tello. The first way is we are just your distribution outlet. And if that's the case, we don't give you any production fees, and you get 100% of the web, what we call web residuals. The second thing is we give you some production fees, which is usually, you know, minimal, around like $3,000. And then you put in either like sweat equity or your own funds, and like, you know, so it's like a co-funded project. And then we split the web residuals, your portion, 50-50. And then the third way is where Tello incurs all the cost of the production. We pay you as a writer. You receive writer-producer credit depending how much sort of sweat equity you put into producing it, like, you know, getting locations, helping casting, you know, logistics stuff. And then Tello gets 100% of the web residual. So what we do is each month I have to sit there and comb through all the view counts for that month, and then deduct. PayPal takes its fees, other thing takes its fees, hosting. So it is net subscription. So it's after sort of we incur all the cost of like hosting and paying for the logistics and PayPal and all that. And then that chunk that's left over, that is the 80% of that is then distributed based on the percentage of views. And the distribution comes every 3 months. So I take it and do all the numbers each month. So if someone says, hey, you know, where was I? I can get them their view counts, their percentages, you know, without disclosing other content providers' information. And then it's divided. So if you roll a sellback and you funded it, you get 100% of your chunk. If you're, our project Gay Street Therapy, we split it with you 50-50. And if it's a Tello project, then it goes back into helping us create more content.
You know, it's funny. I do a very similar thing for a local content network here, and that number crunching is very difficult. So
thank goodness for Excel formulas.
Yes, I feel your pain on that. So Dane Golden, our friend who is a frequent guest on the show, is just wanting to know what your URL was.
Oh, so the easiest thing is Tello, T-E-L-L-O, films.com, tellofilms.com.
Great. Hey, Dane. How's it going, Dane?
We always love it. Dane's great.
Go to hey.com.
Hey.com is where you can find. Dane's got a new podcast too. You can check it out.
Oh yeah, you should check if you're an independent. Dane, what's your podcast called? I forgot the name.
It's Tube Talk is the
Tube Talk. There we go.
And it's great.
It's fun.
It's 15 minutes. They talk about, you know, developments in the content creation space. A lot of it on YouTube and that kind of thing. It's really good stuff. So here's what you're gonna do. You're gonna go to iTunes. You're going to look us up behind the video. You can hit subscribe. Then you're going to search for Tube Talk. Then you're going to subscribe to Dane's podcast. And then you've got your whole commute done.
You're covered.
And it's just one day a week. And then next week next day you can listen to something else. So that's what you're going to do there. So, well, great. This has been fascinating because, you know, we talk a lot about the cash register, and it looks like you've got something that's working here, Kristen. And it's, we're really excited to learn about what you're doing, and it's
yeah.
Great.
Have you ever thought about doing Turkish music videos?
That has not come up on my list.
Because if you did Turkish music videos, you would frequently
be. Is that
huge? It's huge. So there's a Muyap is our number five. So we do every week as we go through the top YouTube channels according to TubeFilter.com, and Muyap is this Turkish music collective, and my understanding is they formed in response to a lot of rampant piracy going around in Turkey. So they've created a YouTube channel where people can go and listen to their music and the artists.
They have over 10,000 videos.
It's insane.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yep.
And our theory is that people around the world of Turkish descent are, you know, catching up on what's going on there by watching Muyap on YouTube. So pretty amazing the international reach of this,
wow.
This video platform. Number four is another thing called Spinin, and that is a electronic music channel. So people like listening to their music on there, so it's good stuff. Number three is movie clips trailers. So 43 million views for movie trailers, although I don't think that many people went to the movies last week, but we'll talk about that in a minute. So people like the trailers more than... You know, it's funny, when my wife and I, we can never agree on what to watch when we're trying to watch a movie at home. So a lot of times we just settle on watching trailers for 2 hours because we
can never... It's like a trip to the video store in the 80s.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. Those were horrible visits when we were going to the video store. We could never agree on anything. So it was funny. One time we did agree on something. The movie was out. Like, they didn't have it. And we're walking out the door. And this wasn't like a current release kind of thing. It was like an older film. We're walking out the door, and somebody drops it off right when we asked the guy if he had another copy of it. That was like, he's like, whoa. He goes, that wasn't the first time it happened either. So it's pretty wild. Number two, now this one's going to really freak you out. The Disney Collector, 47 million views of a woman taking Disney toys out of the box and putting them together. So she is
gotta love it.
You know, north of $1 million a year.
Only thing I could imagine that would get more attention than that is some crazy guy playing video games and letting other people watch him.
That's right. Just last week, we were talking about how PewDiePie just isn't converting his subscribers to views. Well, this week, he was the top YouTube channel, eclipsing the Disney Collector and every other Vevo channel with 62 million views of his whatever it is he does. So... you know, sometimes...
You know, people watching people play video games. You think people will ever watch people play football?
They might tonight. Tonight's the Super Bowl. Who's playing, Tim? I can't... Is it the Broncos and some other... The Seahawks? Is that
Seattle Seahawks, yeah.
Okay, so I'm not totally out of the loop here. I had to look that up this morning because I'm... I kind of like the Jets because I like the local underdog and the Giants. But that's tonight. And the NFL is going to launch a platform that will bring more football videos online according to TubeFilter. So... I guess their online video library has been lacking. The NBA is starting to do a lot of YouTube stuff, and they're sitting on all this content that they could be making money off of. So it looks like they're going to be launching something called NFL Now, and it's going to be a customizable platform with football content. NFL's got those great films, real film, right? It's good stuff.
There's a whole channel to ESPN Classics where people watch like old football games where they know who is going to win. I mean, it's just amazing how. I don't understand you boys sometimes. Like, they, you know what I mean? It's I can't wait for this play, you know? Right. And it's like, you know who's going to win.
Yeah,
like,
no, it's funny.
You still watch these old projects.
I will say that I am not one of those.
Yeah.
it's true. People love watching. Like, ESPN Classics is a great example of a network that replay. I mean, some of those things you might want to watch again. Maybe like the Miracle on Ice hockey game between the USSR and the USA, that kind of stuff. But
well, let me ask you this, Lon. If you were going to produce something sports related, would you need a place to do that?
You would, Tim. Tim is the master of segues, by the way. You would, and that is why Fox Sports Digital is going to the YouTube creator space in Los Angeles to make some stuff. Now, I was reading this. This is from MediaPost. So they're going to be doing, kind of going into the studio and making stuff. What does that mean for, like, does that push out some of the lesser
traffic people? Here's the deal. They have an incredible space that they built in Marina Del Rey. And, I mean, it's a state-of-the-art facility with cameras, with sound stages, with a theater, with a 4K digital projector from Barco. I mean, it's just an incredible space. They've got a control room. They've got a recording studio for making music. So why wouldn't a digital entertainment or digital sports company want to use the facility?
And it's free, right?
It depends.
You have to
have
a certain number of subscribers, don't you?
You do have to, and you have to be approved by YouTube to use the space, and you have to kind of go through a program to get there. But I would say that the type of production that Fox Sports would be doing is way different than your typical YouTuber, and that the control room type facility has, in my estimation, kind of been sitting empty, and so this really makes a smart move for Fox Sports to take advantage of that. So I don't think they're going to be kicking anybody out, but maybe maybe if they had done a music type video, they that might be.
Could be. And Chipotle, one of my favorite fast food, healthy sort of healthy restaurants, is launching a TV series called Farmed and Dangerous. And it's going to be on Hulu and Hulu Plus in February. Kristen, have you ever thought about that? I mean, do you ever get approached by like some commercial entity that wants to create some niche content? Does that happen?
We haven't been approached by those guys. We did get an email from a distribution company that does mostly VOD projects, and so we were kind of toying around with, you know, do we want to take, you know, one of our projects and sort of combine it and make it more into a movie, and, you know, once it's kind of had its run on Tello, use that as a distribution outlet. And, you know, in talking with people who use this particular group, they don't have nearly as profitable of a deal as we do. And so it would probably take a lot of time. You know, that for us would be more publicity, right? Like lifting up our brand.
Right. If Chipotle said, hey, we want you to produce a show for us.
We would absolutely. We haven't been a
spicy hot lesbian burrito.
That's right. Lesbians love Chipotle. Listening, Chipotle.
It's a good mix. You know, they should take you up on it. So. Well,
healthy eating.
They're so smart though. I mean, did you see like they had like an iTunes game or like a where they did that they did a video with Fiona Apple singing a song and they have like a scarecrow have you guys seen that?
No.
YouTube? Check it out. It's because I'm sounding like an idiot right now, only having half of the information. But they did this amazing ad for a video game that was all about Chipotle Scarecrow. Here we go. And it's a scarecrow who, like, decides he's going to make fresh food. It's got 11 million views. It was up 4 months ago.
Wow. Check that out.
Yeah. It's called The Scarecrow, and it was an ad for their game.
Oh,
it's an app-based game. And so they did this. Yeah.
So
it's
great for an app that advertises them. That's kind of a
exactly. And it's very light branding. Like, right. You know who it is, but it's very light branding, and it's beautiful.
I was reading something too that Chipotle is trying to figure out how to get the line moving faster because there's a lot involved with getting
what a great problem.
It is a great problem to have. You know, and it's funny, in Connecticut here, I'm not going to go out too far off on a tangent here, but I've got a Chipotle up about an hour north of me, which I go to occasionally, and the line there moves very much slower than it does in New York City. New York City, it was like that Soup Nazi episode in Seinfeld where you're like, you got to know what you want when you get, you know? They move you through a lot quicker in the city, but I guess they have a higher volume. So last item on our list here, and then I've got a good tip of the week related to our creator space discussion. Super Bowl, the most talked about commercials from the Hollywood Reporter. There's a whole bunch of them that are, I guess they're being pre-released now. So, you know, I used to watch the Super Bowl for the game if I had a dog in the fight. But, you know, the commercials, right? That was what it is. Now you can watch them all before they're even on the air. So what's that do for?
What's the point, right?
I mean, it kills the whole thing.
Yeah.
Release them after, you know, like.
Yeah, give us some reason to watch.
Did you guys see the Anna Kendrick, Super Bowl ad where she's wanting to be in a beer commercial but they couldn't afford for the Super Bowl?
Lon's wife wouldn't let him watch it.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to watch any of that stuff.
it's a really funny. It's a viral commercial for a beer who couldn't afford an ad, but they use Anna Kendrick, and so she's essentially kind of getting her hair done, saying like, I mean, am I like Super Bowl ad hot? I don't know. And it's this, but she can't say Super Bowl, so they have to bleep it every time. It's so funny.
Colbert did a funny thing with Super Bowl also, like Superb Owl, I think was his.
No. Yeah.
Because they've been cracking down on people even mentioning the name Super Bowl out there. So.
Which is so bizarre.
You know, before we get to your thing there, Lon, I do want to mention that our buddy Kai Hansen.
That's right. We almost forgot to mention that.
Esquire ordered season 2 of his show, White Collar Brawlers. So he's not involved with the production anymore, but he's listed as a creator, and you know, he did the whole pilot online, drove all the people to a live event. So congrats to him.
And I would totally like be involved with that show, except I don't like getting punched in the head. So
there you go.
I just avoid that. So quickly, we'll just go through the movies real quick. Lone Survivor, number 5, 7 to 7.3 million bucks this week. It almost looks like last week, except that the movies are in different places. The Nut Job, it's a kid's film, $7.6 to $7.9 million brought in. Frozen, still on the list at number 3. The Awkward Moment, number 2. I think that's a new film. And then Ride Along is still hanging in there at number 1. So the
Awkward Moment is the Zach Braff crowdfunded one, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
I think so.
Yeah,
It cost $8 million and it brought in like 7 or something in the first weekend. So
yeah, they did 10 this weekend. So they
or
are
10. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah. 9.9 to 10.2 is the estimate from Deadline.com. So it looks like they have broken even. So I guess crowdfunding might work occasionally, huh? So pretty cool to see that moving along there. That's good for you too, Kristen. Right? When these crowdfunded things work.
Yeah, you know, when you have someone like Zach Braff and Spike Lee going in the crowdfunding round, it really sort of, I think, makes you think about it. And also, you know, I almost feel sorry for like super independent folks because, you know, Zach Braff and Spike Lee can get a meeting in Hollywood at any point in time. You know, and I felt, you know, anyone should be able to crowdfund. I should preface this by saying that, you know, but I think filmmakers should really think about, you know, what that means, right? Like, as an independent producer, what that means for your projects and how to adjust to the marketplace. But, you know, we crowdfunded Nikki and Nora, and our goal was $50,000, and we raised $65,000.
Wow, that's great.
And, because, you know, just because they had this huge, massive fan base that had been waiting for 9 years. And I don't know if I kind of mentioned this, but Nikki and Nora is the first time an unaired pilot has been reimagined for the internet, and so
So they had made this for some to pitch to a network. It didn't happen, but it's developed its own fan base on its own.
Right. Yeah. It was shot back in 2004 with Christina Cox and Liz Vassy, and it was shot for UPN. And in 2004, Bush beat Kerry, and all these anti-gay marriage amendments won on the ballot. And UPN at the time, and this would have been the first network show that had like a lesbian lead, a couple as the lead. They were New Orleans detectives, yeah. And they sort of looked at the climate and they were like, you know what, we don't think the climate is really right for this. We don't think it'll be well received. And it was shelved, and then somehow someone put it up on YouTube, and it started getting this fan following. Like all these like lesbians started writing fan fiction and like really falling in love with it. And Christina Cox and Liz Vassy went on to do, you know, other great things. And so, and they still were huge fans of theirs. And so in, you know, this past year, 2013, Nancy Lee and Liz and Christina just sort of had this free time and really always wanted to work together again and had a passion for bringing it back. And so we had to be very careful because, you know, the production company owned certain components, so we had to change it enough to be, you know, different, but we could keep like the names and their relationship, and so we had to change enough to reimagine it for the web. But, you know, we really consider ourselves like groundbreakers in that area as well.
Fascinating stuff. So Tim just sent me a screenshot of the thumbnail of the thankfully the thumbnail changes as we do this thing, but it looks like I'm about to like eat my microphone.
What thumbnail did you was sent?
It was an awkward moment.
Oh, okay.
Check your email, it's probably there.
Oh, all right.
Tim will forward it over to you. So yeah, the thankfully the thumbnail updates every 30 seconds or so that won't be on there for much longer, but it is cool when the fans do own the content at some point and really take it upon themselves to do it. I mean, you think about what would have happened with Star Trek, right, back in the day, which was really, I think, one of the first examples of really passionate fans, you know, bringing something back, and it took a long time for them to do it. They probably could have had a much different approach on this in the modern days, in the future that we live in now, which is pretty cool. So we'll move on to our tip of the week before we close out the show. And, you know, we were talking about this YouTube creator space, but one of the things that a lot of people aren't thinking about is the fact that you most likely have a cable access channel in your area. If you've got cable television, a lot of times they're required to have a public access place. And you can use that to make productions. And we have one locally to me around the corner. They just got a bunch of grant funding. They've got all Black Magic equipment, like really good stuff. And they are more than happy to let you come in and make something there. That, you know, they want you to put it up on the cable access channel, which is not a bad thing to have a little additional distribution. But you can then take that video and do your own thing with it. You know, I would imagine you'd have to
Wayne's World.
Do the Wayne's World thing. I mean, it's totally possible. So, you know, even if you're not qualified to be a YouTube use the YouTube creator space, or you don't have one of them nearby, you know, a lot of times just getting out of your handheld camera thing and getting into a little bit of a nicely lit studio environment with good audio, you can maybe shoot an interview there and then kind of do more stuff with it after the fact. So definitely, you know, look around and see what's nearby, because I think you might have some really good resources available to you that you may not be thinking about. So, and they usually have like the black curtain and the fern, you know, the fake plant that you can work into your set. What is that? There's like a show on Funny or Die.
Between
the ferns, right? Which is kind of pushing that mantra out a little bit more.
Zach Galifianakis.
So we are at the end of our show. Kristen, this was great talking with you.
Because thank you.
It's such an awesome model you've built, and you really
big shout out to Brian Rada for bringing
big shout out to Brian Rada Consulting, who
hooked us up.
Yep, absolutely.
He's a fun guy at parties too. He's very funny. So
A fun guy when you're on a Google Hangout. So I can only imagine what like some good music and a drink would do.
and a master at working the red carpet. At the IAWTV Awards, we didn't have anyone scheduled to like be in charge of the red carpet and moving folks through. And I looked around and I saw Brian. I was like, Brian, can you help? And he was awesome. It was like he was born to do that job.
Yeah, he's amazing. I definitely shout out to him, and thank you guys for being so quick about, you know, having me on and letting me talk about, you know, something that I'm clearly super passionate about. And really, we definitely want to sort of let other people know about our model, because we think it's unique. You know, we've been successful at it for enough years that, you know, we can kind of talk about it. So that's kind of where we want to go next as an organization, is sort of spreading the word, like, you know, how we did it and what the process was. So I just, huge shout out to you guys, and big thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great. We appreciate you coming on. And where can people, now you said Twitter's your main social media resource at the moment. So where on Twitter can people find you and all the things that you do?
Yep, they can find us Telofilms at Telofilms, TelloFilms. And my Twitter handle is Kristen Tello, CHRISTINTELLO. And Nikki and Nora also has a Twitter handle that's just Nikki and Nora, Andy.
Cool. So check all of those things out. I could see some really good multi-platform storytelling here with Nikki and Nora too, Tim, right? We should
For sure.
Definitely do that. Tim, where can people find you?
At One Tim Street.
That is where you can find Tim, or you can find him at a conference near you. You can't miss him. He's always walking around. So you can find me at LONSEIDMAN on Twitter. And this show records every Sunday morning at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 Pacific. So if you go to BehindTheVideo.com, you will find our homepage, which is our Google Plus page. So hit the plus button on there, and when we schedule one of these things, you'll get a little notification, and you can watch live. You can ask questions. So Dane asked a question, and we were able to answer it live on the show. So check that out. iTunes, you can subscribe to us there, so do that. Leave a nice note if you liked the show in the review column there. Stitcher, we're over there. We're on the Windows thing, too. So anywhere you can find a podcast, you can find us. Subscribe to it. We love to interact with our viewers. And if you have a web series or you're doing some independent content and you want to come on the show, send us an email. We'll see about getting you on. And that will do it for this edition of Behind the Video. We are a wrap.
Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JASONPERRIER. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.